the Cloud Podcast, your launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud and Out Podcast. My name is Andreas.
And my name is Michael.
And we are two brothers, independent consultants at Vidix, technical writers at CloudOnAut, and programming founders at Marbot. And what we do is we focus 100% on Amazon Web Services, and this is also what this podcast is about. And every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS. One of us prepares the topic, which is not known to the other one. So, Michael, what's the subject for today?
Today we talk about monitoring, Andreas. There are many ways to monitor an application, and in this episode we focus on websites, a web application. So, for example, you can monitor from a technical perspective. So, for example, on AWS you could, if this runs on behind a load balancer, you could monitor the load balancer, monitor 500s on the load balancer, you could monitor the latency to your backends, and then your backend itself, if it's running on EC2 or maybe Fargate. You can monitor all kinds of things on the application level, also from a technical perspective. And last but not least, you could monitor the database. The assumption here is that if all the technical metrics are fine, the users will have a good experience. And the problem is that this is not necessarily true. So for example, if you load external JavaScript on your website, this could break. And you will not notice this on the load balancer because this is executed on the client side. There could be problems with the DNS setting. So no one is actually reaching your load balancer, but the load balancer still is fine. There could also be a problem with your TLS certificates, for example, or there are many other issues that can arise that you cannot really figure out if you only look at the technical metrics of your application. So what's a alternative here? And the idea is that you monitor your application more from an end user's perspective. So there are different ways of doing this. One way could be to monitor business metrics. So for example, you could monitor number of logins per minute, number of signups per hour, number of purchases per hour, things like this. And if those numbers are different than usual, then this could be indicator problem as well. And the other way of monitoring from an end user perspective is using synthetics monitoring. And the idea here is that we simulate a user. So for example, we simulate the flow, the sign up flow of a user in a way that is as close as possible to the real world. So for example, I know that you are or you used Selenium in the past. So Selenium is a way to kind of remote control a browser. So you can load a website and you can click on this button, you can fill in this value into this form field, things like this. And that's kind of the idea of synthetics monitoring. So we simulate a user using a browser, and this browser is controlled by a script. So the whole test is automated.
Okay, so that sounds very interesting, because I think one other problem with monitoring it from the backend side, from a technical perspective with CloudWatch metrics and CloudWatch alarms, is that you also have difficulties defining thresholds. Often we have false positives in our metrics alarms, because it's very hard to figure out what's really a problem from the user side perspective. So I really like that approach, because I want to get notified when users struggle using my application. And I don't want to get notified if, I don't know, a crawler sends hundreds and thousands of requests and some of them fail. I don't care, basically. So testing from the user side seems to be also a good way to reduce the number of false positives when it comes to alarms and getting up at night to look at a problem that doesn't really affect any users.
Yeah, I think you can also add like another perspective. So I think so if your synthetics monitoring fails, then you are in troubles, because then it is actually not working. And I think that with like technical monitoring, you could detect problems a little bit earlier before they affect your users. But as you said, this highly depends on the system that you run, and also if you can define the threshold in a good way. But in the end, if the end user perspective monitoring fails, then you know that it's not working, and you definitely have to do something.
Yeah, so then it's definitely time to to wake something up at night, or someone up at night, and fix the problem. Okay, Michael, so that sounds very interesting. So, but how do I do monitoring from end user perspective? How does that work?
I already mentioned Selenium as a solution, but I'm not going to use it for today in our podcast. So instead, we use a new AWS service, or it's part of CloudWatch, and it's called CloudWatch Synthetics. And CloudWatch Synthetics sounds like a big thing, but actually you have to understand that it more or less only runs a Lambda function in Node.js, and this Lambda function uses a framework, a library called Puppeteer. And Puppeteer is developed by Google, and it's a way to remote control a headless or not headless Chrome browser. So basically with Puppeteer, you can remote control a Chrome browser. And this runs in a Lambda function, and CloudWatch Synthetics kind of orchestrates the whole thing. So CloudWatch Synthetics runs this Lambda function on a schedule, and CloudWatch Synthetics collects the results. So for example, you can perform screenshots, and then you can see those screenshots in CloudWatch Synthetics. It also collects the logs from your Puppeteer scripts, and it also collects all the HTTP requests that were made by this headless browser. So for example, if you load a website, then this is not a single HTTP call, because it will, after it fetched the HTML, it will then go and fetch images, CSS, JavaScript, and all kinds of things. And this is all recorded in a so-called in a file where you basically get as a JSON file all the HTTP calls with latency and bytes transferred and things like this. So you can do kind of high-level analysis of performance problems as well with this data in CloudWatch Synthetics. But this is something that you should, or that you have to do on your own then. Basically, there are many ways you could use CloudWatch Synthetics, because it's basically a way to execute Puppeteer in a Lambda function. And it's your job to provide the Puppeteer script. And a Puppeteer script is not really a Puppeteer script. It's a JavaScript that uses the Puppeteer API. And it runs in Node.js. But the example that I'm going to use today is website monitoring. So as we already mentioned, so for example, you could open the website, then you can check for certain HTML elements to be present. So very simple example, is there a headline available? You can also check the title. Does it contain some special word? So all kinds of things. But you could also then click on certain elements. You could press a button. You can enter values. And this is then more sophisticated stuff, but it's all possible. But this is nothing that CloudWatch Synthetics really helps you with, because this is what you have to do in your script. But it's possible to do it with Puppeteer, and Puppeteer is really, it's used by many people. So there's lots of examples out there in the internet, and it's an open source project. So you will find help.
So one question that comes to my mind is there any special to writing that JavaScript that interacts with the Puppeteer API to test my website? Or can I run the same JavaScript code locally to execute Puppeteer as well? Is there a special format or something, some things I have to have to fit in, or some interface that I need to implement for getting that to work with CloudWatch Synthetics?
Yeah, so CloudWatch Synthetics, basically, they provide a very thin library, and where this library provides you a so-called page instance. So that's what Puppeteer provides you. And with this page instance, you can do whatever you like. But if you want to run this locally, I haven't found a library that CloudWatch imports on NPM, so it doesn't seem to be public available. And so you cannot run this locally. It's only available inside the Lambda function, and it's provided by a Lambda layer that AWS provides. So I think it's not so easy to make this work locally.
But that's a bummer, because how do you write that script and how do you test it? Do you have to upload it to Lambda each time to test it? That's
kind of, yeah. So, I mean, you could, if you somehow have some more complicated flow, you could get a local puppeteer up and running. It's just an NPM install, basically. And then you could figure out all the calls that you have to make against the Puppeteer API. And if you're done, you could take this and wrap it with the synthetics library from AWS. But it's I think that is kind of a problem. If you want to run it locally, you have to figure something out.
There's room for improvement for the developer experience here.
Yeah, so that... there's definitely room for improvement. Also, the documentation about CloudWatch Synthetics is very, it's only a few pages long.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be some improvements there. But what you get in the end is, so from what I understand and what I experience as a user of CloudWatch Synthetics, it's nothing more than a scheduled executor of Lambda functions that collects the screenshots, the HTTP calls that were made, and the logs. So that's kind of it. And they make sure that Puppeteer works by bundling it in a Lambda layer. So that's kind of what CloudWatch Synthetics does, at least from what I understand.
Okay, I have a question regarding that. So When I set up CloudWatch Synthetics, does it create a Lambda function for me?
Yeah, and that's kind of where the issues start. it creates a Lambda function in your AWS account,
mm-hmm.
and this is visible as a like any other Lambda function.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it consists of some custom code that is injected by AWS. So that's the handler code,
mm-hmm.
and this handler code executes, or it also gets access to the Puppeteer stuff from a Lambda layer that AWS provides,
mm-hmm.
and then it gets executed to your custom code that is also provided as a Lambda layer.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they create a Lambda function and they create a Lambda layer for you in your account.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really don't like is that if you delete the CloudWatch Synthetics, and then this is called the canary, so the mm-hmm. thing that runs the Puppeteer script is called the canary.
Mm-hmm.
If you delete it, the Lambda function stays in your account. And so that's, I don't know.
I really don't like services that create other resources in my account. Why don't they hide? Why don't abstract they away that part of the service? I don't understand that. But yeah, that's... In the past, AWS is announcing more and more services that are creating Lambda functions or whatever, spinning up machines or whatever. And I don't really understand why they don't do that in their own accounts, so that I don't have to have to care about those Lambda functions and stuff. Because what do they do? Do they also, I don't know, for example, update the Node.js version if the old one gets outdated, or what? Do they really manage that, or do I have to do that? And also, what happens when someone accidentally deletes the function, all that stuff. I don't think that's a good practice to create, to offer a service, and then parts of the service basically just spin up a few resources. So then they could also just provide me a CloudFormation template to basically provide the same service, right? So I don't get that. So I don't like that as well. Hmm.
So I agree. So I think that the same could have been implemented with a simple CloudFormation template. Instead of using their own scheduling mechanism, they could just have used a CloudWatch event, a cron-like event, to trigger it. And
that was another question. So do they also set up a CloudWatch event rule, or is that handled differently?
No. So I at least I cannot see a CloudWatch event rule. So this seems to be implemented in some other way. Besides that, what you also get is that the Lambda function populates CloudWatch metrics, and it does this not in the AWS namespace. So in CloudWatch, there's the namespace. Everything that starts with AWS slash is kind of only accessible by AWS from a write perspective. And CloudWatch Synthetics writes metrics to a namespace that does not start with AWS slash, so it's a custom, like a custom metric thing. So basically the Lambda function publishes the data itself, and you also need to give it permission to do it. And so that's kind of, yeah, all the logic is in the Lambda function, basically.
And we also have to pay for it, by the way, probably.
Yes, okay. Yes, you also have to pay for it, yeah. And that's the next kind of thing that I was surprised. So the pricing. So you can run the canary at different intervals, and the shortest interval is 1 minute. And I mean, I really like to be notified very early. So I started with a 1 minute interval. And then I figured out that this will cost $50 per month. And that seems to, as only the cost for CloudWatch Synthetics. So you have to pay for the Lambda function, you have to pay for storage on S3, and you have to pay for the CloudWatch metric as well.
So basically, I pay $50 per month so that they provide me a Lambda layer and invoke my function. Is that what it
Yes.
Okay.
So that's kind of also what I understand. And then I ask on Twitter if the pricing model is a little bit strange. And yeah, so most people agreed that it's not a good idea to run canaries at a 1 minute interval. So if you run it at 50 minute interval, then the pricing is not really a big problem. But still, it seems a little bit costly for what it does.
I don't understand. So what's the cost from an AWS perspective for running it every minute? It's basically zero. So the thing that I have to pay for is, so the Lambda execution I have to pay. I don't know what is causing that pricing. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you compare it to other solutions that provide similar features, then the price seems to be higher than what the competitors provide. But I'm not really an expert here. I just looked at what services like Pingdom provide, and it seems cheaper to me, but the pricing is not very transparent on their website. So I'm not 100% sure, but it seems to be very expensive.
Okay, so I have a question. So is then the value that CloudWatch Synthetics brings in, is it then basically the user interface? So the way I can basically look at the data, see what happened there, create alarms, is that where the value comes from?
Yeah, so from my perspective, what it adds to the like standalone, or the, like the plain Puppeteer, is that, I mean, they added some magic way that screenshots are automatically uploaded to S3. I mean, that's basically two or three lines of Node.js code, I guess. Then you can implement this on your own. And they collect this, it's called I cannot really pronounce it in English, so HR file that collects all the HTTP calls in a standard format. I think that's also something, that's something that they upload to S3 automatically. I'm not sure how complicated that would be. And then they collect the logs. I don't think that's very complicated, because you just get them on standard out on the Lambda function. So there's this basically available for free.
But is there a user interface that shows me all of that? So can I go to the AWS management console and then see the screenshots and everything?
Yes. Yes.
Ah, okay. So I would guess that's probably the value they bring in here, because otherwise you have to find the data on S3 and something you basically don't have any user interface if you build it yourself.
One last thing to add that I was kind of missing, I'm not 100% sure if that is relevant to all people, but one idea of this testing from an outside perspective, from an end user perspective, is also to like make sure that everything works if you enter the system from the internet like end users do. So usually those checks run from different locations. So they check from maybe from some locations in Asia, they check from locations in the US, from locations in Europe, from locations from all over the world, basically. And that's not true for CloudWatch Synthetics. CloudWatch Synthetics runs in the region that you define. So for example, if deployed to US East 1, then this Lambda function runs in US East 1, and it makes the calls from US East 1. And it also is inside the AWS network already. So I'm not sure, or I think there could be some issues with reaching your application that are not covered here, because you're already very close to your application.
Yeah, you could at least deploy it to another region than your application is running in. So then you have, okay.
And I think I would definitely deploy to two regions, because if one of the regions, like if your main region goes down, then CloudWatch Synthetics will not work as well. So you definitely should deploy the monitoring to another region as well. Yeah.
So is there a way to find out when CloudWatch Synthetix is not running? So is there any heartbeat or something that I can monitor?
Yeah, so it populates CloudWatch metrics, but it's your job to create a CloudWatch alarms. So you could define a CloudWatch alarm, like I think you wrote a blog post about this Deadman switch approach. So you could create a CloudWatch alarm that fires if there's no data coming in from CloudWatch. So that's possible, but it's still, that's something that you have to do. Yeah, that's not kind of provided already by CloudWatch Synthetix. The UI helps you a little bit, but I cannot remember that it was possible to define like this Deadman switch alarm in the UI. But I mean, yeah, that's something you have to do. I created a CloudFormation template to help us a little bit with all of that, because CloudWatch Synthetix is supported by CloudFormation since a few, I think, maybe it's months already or weeks. But then you also have to create the S3 bucket. You have to create the CloudWatch alarms and stuff. So that's part of a CloudFormation template that I created, and I will add the link to the show notes. So that's a very easy way to spin up everything that is needed, not only CloudWatch Synthetix. So that's, I think, helpful if you deploy your stuff with CloudFormation. At least you can copy the relevant stuff there.
Okay, Michael, so how does the flow look like? So I want to monitor my web application, and I want to get notified when the user journey breaks. So for example, when users are no longer able to log in. So how do I do that? What do I need to set up in which order, and how does it work at the end?
Yeah, so I think if you really want to have the correct order, you would create an S3 bucket first. So this is where the Lambda function uploads the screenshots and stuff. And then you create the CloudWatch Synthetix canary. So this is the piece that that runs the Lambda function. And if you do this over the UI, then you get, you have basically two options. You can either write the script on your own, or you can use a blueprint. So AWS has, four blueprints blueprints available. For example, for website monitoring, there's a blueprint available. So if you only create those resources, you will not get notified. The check will run, but you will not get notified. And if you want to get notified, then you have to create CloudWatch alarms. You have to, so there's, you for example, can check if the success ratio is above maybe a certain range. So for example, if you use the UI day, I think the default is 90%. And if the successful checks drop below 90%, then you will, the CloudWatch alarm will fire. And then you could connect this to an SNS topic and send an email or something like this. And then, as we discussed, you might also want to create a CloudWatch alarm that figures out if there's no data coming in because the whole thing is not working. That would be a second alarm. So that's something that you would have to create. I spent some time last week integrating this into Marbot. So Marbot is our Slack chatbot, and it will soon support Microsoft Teams as well. But at the moment, when we record this podcast, it's Slack only. And with Marbot, you can simply ask Marbot to monitor your website, and then there will a wizard will start in your Slack window where you select the region, and then you get a link to deploy a CloudFormation stack where you enter the website URL. You can check for a specific title. You can also check for a specific HTML element, and then it deploys everything that you need. And if something goes wrong, you will receive a message in Slack. So I think that's the easiest way if you are using Slack. And otherwise, you have to figure out how to connect all the pieces. And you can definitely use the CloudFormation template to do that, that I mentioned before. Yeah, Andreas, I think that's... when I was preparing this topic, I was kind of like... I was very interested in what CloudWatch Synthetix does. And it turns out it's not really that much. So that's why this is a little bit a shorter... topic here, but yeah, I think that's all it does. And we mentioned the website monitoring already, so there are other use cases possible. You can simulate sign up flows, as we mentioned. You can simulate checkout flows, so or more complicated processes where multiple steps needs to be finished. And then AWS also provides some use cases. So for example, they check for broken links. So they use Puppeteer to fetch the site and extract all the links, and then they again recursively open up all the links and see if they are reachable. So that's also possible, but it's not something that CloudWatch Synthetics does, so this is something that your script does. So basically whatever you do inside your script is something that you can monitor. So if you can search for links and open them, then you can monitor for that. But it's not like a feature that you can configure or something like this easily. It's really the script, the JavaScript, that needs to figure that out. And you can use blueprints from AWS, but I'm very confident that you have to modify those scripts and make sure that they fit your use case.
Is it possible to monitor the latency or the load times of my web application as well with that? Or
yes.
Okay, because I think that is also very interesting to make sure the whole website loads within a certain amount of time and people can, I don't know, I can get logged in, I don't know, 5 seconds or something. So to make sure that also that is covered in the user end user perspective test. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's possible. But if you want to, like, you will very soon hit the default data that is provided, and you have to populate your own data, or you have to inspect the R file and see what you can get out of it. In theory, it's possible, and in practice, it's also possible in a limited way. So you get the time, like the execution time of the whole thing is reported to CloudWatch. So if that is enough information for you, then you are fine. If you need more detailed information, then you have to figure something out.
Okay, so yeah, so I think the topic of monitoring my web application from a user perspective, that is really something that is very important, and maybe also something, Michael, we both haven't focused too much on. So that might be something to do, something interesting to do for our websites and applications as well in more detail. What I like about CloudWatch Synthetics, so we talked a lot about the downsides, and that's what we do, because I think that is important to do as well. But I think the advantages of using CloudWatch Synthetics is you get a product that is bundled together, you have a UI, you have an integration, so all that is already taken care of. Of course, you can build it your own, but I think it's not that something that you do within 15 minutes, so there is some value in this service, definitely. And I like that this is a CloudWatch, a part of CloudWatch, and it's a service that is ready to use. And on the other side, it is very flexible, because many other tools that I know that we are using, I think we are using Uptime Robot. This is a service that we use right now to monitor the websites. They are often very limited in a way that you can define your own checks, because they don't offer you the way to run your own source code. Instead, they have complex wizards and configuration settings that you can do, but of course that is not always covering everything you want to do. So I think that is maybe the big thing that the CloudWatch Synthetics brings in. It is you can run your own script, you can run your own code that does the check, that runs the check, and I think that is maybe also something that differentiates the solution from other providers.
Yeah, so I agree with your summary. So as long as you are comfortable editing or writing JavaScript and like getting used to how Puppeteer works, then you can create very flexible and very powerful checks. But that's like if you're not familiar with JavaScript and stuff and programming, then you will have a hard time using CloudWatch Synthetics.
Sure.
Okay,
Michael, thank you very much. So this was a very interesting topic. And before we end the episode, I want to thank all our listeners and readers of our blog for taking part in the CloudOnAut reader survey that we run in May, celebrating the 5th anniversary of CloudOnAut. And we are really happy with the results of the survey, and I wanted to share some of them here, because I think it is maybe interesting to know what other people are listening to this podcast and what other people are reading the CloudOnAut blog. I think that's maybe, yeah, I think that's interesting to know a bit about the community that you are a part of by listening to this. So First of all, the reader survey found out that all of you are really happy with the content that we provide in the blog and also in the podcast. And what was more interesting to learn about you is that 28% of the listeners and readers use AWS for more than 5 years. So this is, I think, very interesting, because that means the community is really very deep into all the technical details about AWS. They're not just starting. They have worked with AWS for years and learned a lot since then. 35% are using AWS for more than 2 years, which, if you sum it up, is more than 60% are using AWS for more than 2 years, which means I would say they are they are not beginners when it comes to AWS. So that is really interesting. We also asked about your job titles to learn a little bit more about you, the community that listens to podcasts and read the blog. And what's interesting here is 50% have a job title that says I'm a DevOps engineer, whatever that means in practice, and can be discussed, of course. A DevOps engineer or software reliability engineer. 70% are software developers, 14% are architects. So overall, you can say that more than 75% have a highly technical role. So this is the community that you are part of here when listening and reading our blog. So what I didn't expect is, we also asked about, do you use any other cloud providers? And what was very interesting to me is that 60% answered that they use Azure besides AWS, and 52% answered that they used the Google Cloud Platform as well. So I actually didn't expect that. That might be because I'm biased, because we are only doing AWS here. But for me, that's interesting that that many of you are not only using one cloud provider, but others as well. So this is also interesting to know, I think, and maybe also to know about the market a little bit that we are going to. Okay. We also asked about the certifications, the AWS certifications, and that's also very interesting. 70% are Solution Architects Associate certified, and 22% have the professional certificate as a solution architect for AWS as well. So that is interesting. So I would say, in summary, you can say that as a listener to this podcast or as a reader of the Cloud on Out blog, you're part of a community that has a high technical focus on Amazon Web Services and other clouds partly as well. And I think this is also the audience that we like to have, because we really like to write and talk about the deep technical things when it comes to AWS, and that's what we will do in the future as well. Michael, do you have anything to add about the reader survey?
Nothing to add. I want to say thank you to all the readers and listeners, and I'm very happy to create content for such a professional audience. So that's highly appreciated here. So I think we can close this episode, Andrea. So do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, let's do that. So first of all, thank you very much, Michael, for providing the content of this episode. So talking about CloudWatch Synthetics, and one more thing, we thank you for listening to this podcast episode. If you haven't done already, please subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app, and also share it with a friend. So that's it for today. We will come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.